Aisha, good to see you.
It's good to see you as well.
How are you doing?
I'm a bit under the weather.
A bit under the weather, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm doing all right.
I can hear it a bit in your voice, but you sound good to me.
All right.
And, you know, before we sort of get into the... I guess we should unplug the phone first. Tom Hoag keeping his phone plugged in for reasons unknown to me, but I'm tempted to go off the grid a bit here first, Aisha, in light of the weather that everyone's talking about, the fact that it's a super-duper extreme polar vortex outside. I think that's the meteorological term for it. And you know, just to point out that it was exactly 3 weeks ago today, I checked this, that an editor asked me to write a story about how mild and wimpy our winter had been so far. And I dutifully followed instructions and wrote the story. And it had been a mild winter to that point. This is not fake news. And yet here we are in a deep freeze. And I reread my story. I actually quoted a climatologist, the ever-present Dave Phillips. And my story said that the phrase polar vortex has not even been uttered yet this season. And we got a good chuckle over that. And, you know, I've expected some hate mail from people for jinxing the winter, but none has arrived. So I want to say thank you out there for not reading my story or perhaps simply not believing the facts that I had in there. So, but Aisha, you know, I'm curious, what were winters like where you grew up in Pakistan?
So because of the fact that I lived right next to the sea, we didn't really have winters. Yeah. As cold as the ones we have here in Hamilton.
Right.
So winter was basically just, you know, putting on a light jacket or a sweater and a blazer, perhaps.
Nice.
But depending on where you live in Pakistan, you might have areas which experience snow. You might have some hail, especially in the northern side of Pakistan.
Right, yeah, that's a lot of diversity geographically to the country.
Yeah.
What city was that? We'll get into that later. But
I grew up in Karachi, which used to be the former capital of Pakistan.
Right.
But that was shifted to Islamabad, mm-hmm. which is where I studied.
And of course, Pakistan is this is my clever segue into the topic. Pakistan is where you first wore a hijab.
Yes.
And that's the topic for this episode of The Message, which is titled "Behind the Hijab." And as regular listeners to the show know, Aisha Nasser, the producer of the podcast, on occasion adds her voice to the program, and today she is in the guest's chair. And I'm thinking that, Aisha, given your somewhat reserved nature, and I mean that in a good way, that your feelings on this are...
kind of mixed.
Kind of mixed, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is, I understand, and perhaps we'll talk about that too, but February 1st, marks the 7th annual World Hijab Day, a day that, according to its official website, is held in recognition of the millions of Muslim women who choose to wear the hijab and live a life of modesty. Women, whether they are Muslim or not, are invited to wear a hijab for that one day. In Hamilton, the concept of a hijab day actually goes back further than that, 11 years, actually, to the spring of 2007, when a McMaster University French professor named Muriel Walker, who was not Muslim, promoted a Wear My Hijab Day. And as it happened back then, I was assigned to cover the story. I didn't know anything about the topic at all, and one of the editors said, well, that's why you should cover it. And I learned a little bit, but I have a lot more to learn, no doubt. But the day after that event at McMaster back then, the professor had racist slurs spray painted on her office door. And a Hamilton police investigation, you know, took a look at it as a hate crime. Back then, the hijab was, I think I wrote this in my story, it was in some quarters a lightning rod for controversy. That, you know, through one lens, the hijab was a symbol of modesty, and most of all, as I quoted one McMaster student, a sign of loyalty to God. And for others, with 9/11 still a recent memory, the hijab seemed a political symbol, either of hostility to the West or a symbol of oppression to the extent women were forced to wear it or face persecution. Today, the World Hijab Day website says that people in 190 countries take part in the event. But for such a small piece of cloth, the hijab still stirs emotions in some people. There's a Canadian woman, Yasmin Mohammed, who started a protest-type feed on Twitter called Free From Hijab. She wrote that she wants to raise awareness for women who feel forced to wear hijab. So I work here at the Hamilton Spectator on The Message here with Aisha, and I've come to find that she's an intelligent professional and warm and personable colleague. And as my keen journalistic eye deduced from first meeting her, she wears a hijab. So this is why I asked Aisha to come on, and I'm glad you sort of kind of agreed.
Sort of, kind of. I'm here.
Here we are. So I already asked you about where you grew up in Pakistan, but you were actually born in London, Ontario, because your mother, who was a native of Pakistan, was in London attending school, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
And then you returned to Pakistan as a baby, right?
Yes.
So tell me about life growing up there. Did you have siblings?
Yes. So we're a family of six siblings, but two of my siblings passed away before I was born. And between my eldest sister and I, I'm the middle child. So between my eldest sister and I, there was a gap of 7 years in which my mom lost her two babies, and she wasn't really sure if she would have, another child. But when she found out here in London that she was expecting me, she was so worried. You know, she was all alone in London studying, and she didn't really have immediate family there. So I'm kind of like her miracle baby.
Yes, I was going to say.
But yeah, so I grew up in Pakistan with my siblings, and we're all in different parts of the world now because we've all grown up.
Mm-hmm. How would you compare, the neighborhood where you lived in Karachi? How would it compare to around here, kind of thing? I don't know.
There were more people there.
Yeah.
Because Pakistan is more densely populated than Canada is. But yeah, it was a very warm neighborhood that I grew up in. Even when, times were bad in terms of violence and all of that you sometimes hear in the news, we still had a very strong community that was there for each other. We still looked out for each other, for the kids especially, and making sure that everyone, had a normal and safe and happy childhood. Mm-hmm. So,
what did your father do for a living?
So my father, he's still working. He works at the pharmacy department of a local hospital.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh.
And my mom also works. She's an engineer.
Right. And your mom, we've talked about this before, your mom went to Fanshawe College in London, which is located not all that far from where I grew up in London as well. So
yeah.
One of those small world moments.
One of the first things I did when I came to Canada was to go back to London and see the place where she studied while she was here. And she was fairly young at the time, so I was kind of trying to see it from her eyes, like the mosque where she would pray, the apartment where she was renting with other people from her community.
What year did you come to Canada? How long have you been here?
So I came here in 2017. I moved from Pakistan that year. Yeah.
And maybe difficult questions, what sort of your earliest memory, or what do you recall in terms of your childhood of growing up in the Muslim faith, your awareness of that, and by extension of wearing a hijab?
I think I struggle with that question a lot because I was raised Muslim. All of my memories kind of are tinted with just being Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
So it would probably be you asking me, what is your earliest memory?
Right.
And I don't really have a specific one I can pick out and say, yeah, that's when I knew that, I'm Muslim. Because it was kind of how I was raised, right?
Right.
But I think it may have to be, just sounds themselves. So if you grow up in Muslim countries, you hear the sound of the call to prayer that comes, five times from a mosque.
Yes.
So it's a very melodious sound, and I've never heard it here in Canada from any mosque here, but it gives you a peaceful feeling. And if you read the words and you read what they mean, it's just saying that, it's time for prayer, and you can come in and find peace here. So. Mm-hmm.
And these were sounds that would sort of emanate from the mosque
yeah.
that you would hear in the community outside?
Absolutely, yeah. They would... they would use loudspeakers, but they weren't as pervasive. It was a very gentle and calming sound, like, kind of like someone singing.
Right. Yeah. It makes me think of like church bells or something.
Absolutely.
Similar thing. And with the hijab, do girls wear the hijab? What age do they start wearing it?
My parents didn't ask me to wear it, but because I was studying Islam, I knew that I would start wearing it around the time I hit puberty.
Oh, I see.
So that's when, you know, you kind of see yourself as a woman, and that's when you see, it's not just you being a woman, but it's also you seeing yourself as an adult and being responsible for your relationship with everyone around you, your relationship with God, and what God requires of you. Mm-hmm. So, but my earliest memory with the hijab, though, I think was when my aunt was kind of like playing dress up with me, and she had like this super nice, very soft, silky scarf, and she kind of gave it to me, and I tried it on, and she took a picture of it, and I still have that picture.
Right.
But I was super small, and that was not a requirement for me at the time. It was just something fun that I wanted to do.
Right. Well, that's a nice early memory.
So
I imagine, you know, growing up in that in your community and so on, that you know, I found, I was reading on the World Hijab Day website, you know, the founder of the day, who lives in New York, said she, when she was growing up in New York, she used to get teased in middle school for wearing hijab. She'd be called a ninja and, you know, a terrorist and things, you know, nasty things. But I'm assuming you, growing up where you did, this was not part of your experience with the hijab.
I think it was kind of part of my experience with the hijab, because Pakistan is not, like, despite what the news tells you, Pakistan is not like a super religious country. Like, not everyone, not every Muslim woman there wears the hijab.
I see.
And not every Muslim family was as religious as mine is.
Mm-hmm.
So I did, like, I do remember being at school, and even though the school I went to was a private school, but it kind of had the hijab as part of the dress code for the older girls there. So I do remember, like, one of the boys, like, taunting me and calling me, like, a member of the Taliban or something, because he thought I was too religious. But yeah, it's kind of like sometimes the attack kind of comes from other Muslims as well, who kind of see you as being too religious. Yeah.
How did that make you feel? Kind of feisty inwardly, or did you feel any sense of, did you find it difficult at all, or how did you?
Oh, I was very angry, because being compared to the Taliban was like absolute, like, I did not like that at all.
Yeah.
But because I was a kid and I knew that, you know, he was also, like, he didn't really mean it that way. Like,
mm-hmm.
So I did reach out to him, like, years later.
And did he remember that?
I don't believe he did,
yeah.
but because it was targeted at me, I did have a very strong memory of it, and I'm really happy that we talked about it.
It stuck with you.
Yeah.
So you went to high school and,
mm-hmm.
and so on through Pakistan, and then what then? Just to talk about a little bit your road from Pakistan to Canada in terms of your education and so on.
I did most of my schooling in Karachi, but then for university, I moved to a different city. I moved to Islamabad. I studied mass communication there, and I specialized in multimedia journalism.
Right.
And a year before I graduated, I got married to someone who lives here. And that was when, like, I started looking at, okay, so I can no longer live in Pakistan, but because I've learned media, I've learned journalism, I can still practice it, because the ethics of our journalistic community don't really change,
mm-hmm.
you know, based on where you live. You still have to put in the hard work. You still have to be fair and thorough and diligent.
Right.
So when I looked into moving to Hamilton, I thought, well, The Spectator seems like a great place to start.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm lucky that I got an interview for a job that I applied to, and I'm here now.
And we're lucky to have you here.
Thanks.
And some of your work, you've shared a bit of it with me, some of your work as a journalism student in Pakistan centered on the rights of women, such as voting, voting rights and so on, right?
The work I did while at university, it centered around it was an independent project that I did, not associated with the university coursework itself, but it was something that a production company in the States called Hit Record was doing. And Hit Record was looking at how technology interacts with democracy.
Right.
And they kind of wanted to make short films on experiences of people all over the world. So I used my own experience of the first time I voted in Pakistan, which was May 2013. I was 18 years old. I was eligible to vote for the first time. And I saw how there was a very visible and a very physical threat to the women in my constituency and how we were prevented from voting for the people we wanted to vote for.
Right.
So it was voter intimidation at work. It was rigging, as it is known in the modern sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so using my experience, I worked with Hit Record and the community of Hit Record to make a short film. And it's part of a larger series of films that we did on surveillance, technology, whistleblowing, and all of that. So,
right. Yeah. Well, that's fascinating. We should post some of that.
I do think the gender aspect of it is interesting because women are often more disproportionately targeted because of, you know, how democracy works. At the time, I wasn't planning on it being just centered around gender because
right.
I thought it extends beyond that. It's part of a larger thing.
Yes.
But it did eventually become about gender. Like, there were men there who were, you know, asserting their power over the women. So,
right. It's,
yeah.
It's what you discovered.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So you've been here living in Hamilton for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
So I know, since you've been here, and as you've pointed out, you know, Pakistan, you know, is a diverse country and has secular aspects to it,
mm-hmm.
and that sort of thing. So have you felt since you've been here, wearing your hijab like you do and so on, that that anyone has looked at you differently? Have you felt any out of place at all, or how would you describe the experience of that here?
When I came here at the airport, everyone was, because they found out that I was moving here permanently, and it wasn't just a one-time trip, they knew I was moving here. They were all super supportive, and like the officials at the airport were like, "Welcome to Canada,"
nice.
You know, all of that.
Yeah.
But I have had a mixture of experiences where people have acknowledged my Muslim faith because I'm very visibly Muslim.
Yes.
And so sometimes that would mean someone standing in line at Tim Hortons and just turning around and saying "Assalamu alaikum," which is the Islamic greeting, which means "peace be upon you."
Oh, wow. Nice.
And I can tell that they're not Muslim, so for them to say it, it just is extra special for me.
For sure.
But then at the same time, I've been on, you know, I've been on the beeline and going back home, and someone has said something like, "Oh, you're undoing the work of feminism and all of that."
Really?
Yeah, and it's strange because that comes from a woman, so you kind of expect that, you know, they understand the nuance that goes into a Muslim woman wearing the hijab.
Yeah.
So it's been a mixture of experiences, but I try to like look at the positive ones, and I also think that I appreciate the experiences where people have tried to engage with me in terms of not just like passing comments, but trying to find out why,
yes.
or trying to find out how it works and all of that.
Yeah.
Because that actually, for me, that means that if they're truly disturbed by my behavior or my choices in life, and they want to help me in however way they can, it would make more sense for them to have an actual conversation with me as opposed to, you know, just passing judgment. That's
right.
not how you, that's not how humans work.
Right.
So
I suppose on a certain level, I mean, it could become tiresome that someone even wants to talk about it. But on the other hand, compared to someone just insulting you or that's welcome.
Yeah, absolutely.
As far as that goes.
Yeah.
Well, so that, you know, you talk about, you know, the nuance and so on. you know, this question I have written down here is very short, and the answer would be very long and nuanced, which is, so why do you wear the hijab? And I suppose part of the answer is you always have. It's part of who you are. But when you explain to people why you have it, why you're wearing it, and what it means to you, what do you say?
So initially, I wore the hijab because I liked how it looked. Like, I liked just the aesthetic aspect of it because I saw some of my family members wearing it. I saw how it looked, and I thought that, you know, it was something that would be cool to wear.
Yeah. My daughter tried to tie a scarf on her head last week. She's 16, just because she enjoyed putting that on. So there you go.
But on a more serious level, and I think my primary reason for doing it now is because I've studied the scripture. I've studied it from a variety of sources, and I do think that the hijab is part of how I should be living and existing as a Muslim woman in this day and age. Mm-hmm. And I do think that it is a requirement for me to wear it. It's how God expects me to be. Now, there's different ways I could be wearing it, but this is the way which I feel is most easiest and more mm-hmm. most practical for me to wear it.
Right.
Yeah.
Because there are other manners of veils and obviously, and so
absolutely.
On, right?
Yeah,
so there's this choice involved there.
Yeah, so... Yeah. The way my mom wears it, she wears a veil which covers her face as well, so you can only see her eyes.
Yes.
But that's not how I interpret the religion.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like with the hijab, because if you see it as an act of worship, you should look at the intention that is going behind it as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if, let's say, you do an act, but your intention is to please your parents, that's not really then you doing it for God, right? You're just doing it for your parents mm-hmm. or you're doing it for society or whatever.
Yes.
But that's not how the hijab works for me. And right. I need to be sure that I'm doing it for God, that I'm not doing it because it looks pretty, but
right.
I'm doing it for God alone. Yeah.
And are there, did you think there are women who do it not for themselves or for God?
I think Muslim women wear the hijab for many reasons. Some of them might just be theologically convinced that this is how it should be.
Yes.
Some of them might be doing it because of that's how culture and society have kind of raised them to be.
Mm-hmm.
Some might be doing it just, you know, because it looks cool, like fashion-wise.
Right.
So it really has to depend on, you know, the woman herself, her situation, her life circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the question, like, why do you wear the hijab, really has different answers. And that's the answer I have for
right.
you.
The World Hijab Day, and I mentioned the one that was held sort of off the cuff in Hamilton years ago, where encouraging women to wear the hijab for a day to show support kind of thing. How do you feel about that concept? Do you think it's useful or helpful or not? Or what do you think about that?
Before I moved to Canada, I had this healthy skepticism about it. I wasn't sure how you could bring that nuance, that context of wearing the hijab into, you know, the World Hijab Day, where you're kind of asking women to put it on and kind of step into the shoes of a Muslim woman.
Right.
But now I feel like in this sort of climate and the conversations that Muslim women are kind of forced to have about themselves,
yes.
It does make sense for something that's such a visible symbol to be shared by other people as well, if they decide to do it.
Right.
But of course, there is a lot more to being a Muslim woman than just, you know, a piece of cloth.
Right.
So I do wish that instead of it just being kind of like a public relations thing, I do wish there was like a greater conversation that we were having
mm-hmm.
on what it means to be a Muslim woman and how just putting the hijab on will not make you understand what we go through every single day of our lives. You kind of have to be a Muslim woman for you to understand that what we carry on our heads is, you know, is way more than just fabric. So there's a whole history involved, there's culture, there's in this society especially, there's small acts of kindness, but also small acts of aggression that you kind of have to make yourself vulnerable to if you're wearing the hijab.
Right.
So.
You I've seen you in the office. You pray during the day.
Mm-hmm.
How many times? I should be up on this. My daughter would know she's taking religion in school and so on, but how many times a day?
I really want to meet your daughter. She sounds fascinating.
Yes, she would enjoy you.
So I pray 5 times a day.
Yes.
I think you saw me pray at work because that's one of the 2 times I should be praying in the day itself.
Right. And that's, you talk about, the hijab being what you wear on your head, but there's so much more to... it's what you carry with you inside, obviously, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's just a very physical reminder of your relationship with God.
Right. And so I mentioned off the top earlier about the hashtag free from hijab Twitter handle that's out there. You know, that a Canadian woman had started this Twitter feed that it appears, at least to me, to be a reaction to World Hijab Day, sort of a counterpoint of sorts, I guess, to World Hijab Day. For women to support her this notion that people should be, women should be free not to wear the hijab, and it's, I guess, again, it gets that lens of oppression of the hijab, I suppose. So have you heard about the hashtag free from hijab Twitter handle, and what do you think of that?
So I did hear about the hashtag, and I've been following it on Twitter. I think there are 2 layers to the conversation that we should be having. First of all, is the layer, which is, if a Muslim woman herself feels that she needs to be freed from the hijab, that does mean that she has not chosen the hijab for herself. And she's being forced to wear it, she's being forced to incorporate it, even though she's not convinced that, it is a part of being Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
And that itself is frightening. Like, that should not be... Any act of worship should not be forced upon you,
right.
Especially in terms of dress, when it's something so visible and something so much a part of you. But then I do think that because of the specific hashtag originates from a group of ex-Muslims, I do think there's a layer of conversation there, which is about Islam itself being oppressive for these particular women, and that's why they find the idea of the hijab to be suffocating.
Right, it feels connected to that.
Yeah.
It's part and parcel,
yeah.
I guess.
And I can see that. I can see how sometimes women are forced to wear the hijab. There's such a healthy way we can talk about religion, and there's such a healthy way we can talk to women who no longer feel convinced that the hijab is part of their faith,
right.
Or that they want to be a part of the faith to begin with.
So not everything, not every question is an attack on the fundamentals of your faith.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because then what happens is that hashtags like these, they're kind of used by people who are openly Islamophobic.
Mm-hmm.
And in that sense, they're not really helping Muslim women who are actively trying to understand what's going on, or even... women who are no longer Muslim, who are just trying to communicate to, the world around them.
Right.
Because it kind of becomes like, oh, let's hate Islam party online,
right.
Instead of, let's
piling
talk about
on exercise.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And, from what you've said, it's obviously for you, it's so much, wearing the hijab is so much part and parcel of who you are and what you believe, that it's a choice.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to ask you, I know the answer now already after having talked to you, but I was going to ask you, if you had a change of heart,
mm-hmm.
and soul, I suppose, at this stage in your life and decided you didn't want to wear the hijab anymore, would you feel you could do that?
So there are days when I just don't feel like wearing it. Just like sometimes I don't feel like praying, or sometimes when it's Ramadan, which is the month of fasting, I don't feel like fasting.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like that kind of a conversation that happens in my head is something that has more to do with how I feel. But because right now I'm intellectually convinced that this is how I should be as a Muslim woman, I don't see that change of mind happening anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, if there is something new that I find out, a newer interpretation, a newer reading that convinces me of, you know, that perhaps I had read the scripture wrong, that perhaps I had understood it wrong, then yeah, of course. And I might, you know, take it off. But right now, I don't see that happening.
Right.
I feel like it's here to stay.
I thought it was interesting. You know, you mentioned the woman on the bus who suggested that you were sending back feminism by wearing the hijab, and it got me thinking about, again, not to keep bringing my daughter back into it, but she I found her an interesting person to talk to about these things, but because she, you know, she read the beauty myth book mm-hmm. recently and so on. I mean, she's only 16, but she's into these things, and we've talked about that. You know, that there are for people, for anyone to argue that, you know, the hijab is a restriction on how a woman should look, and is not as, you know, isn't liberated like we are in the West to have this, you know, sense of freedom. And yet in the West, there are expectations for what women should look like and act like.
Absolutely.
For men too, but more so for women, I think it's fair to say. And they're deeply embedded in our culture. So, you know, this is my commentary section of the show, but I think it's a contradiction to suggest that one manner of dress, that one belief system, is oppressive, while the rest of us are on this separate pedestal of liberation.
Absolutely.
I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I feel like just the expectation of women to have makeup on every day when they
exactly.
go to work, and if they're not doing it, oh, are you tired? Or is everything all right at home? And you know, all of those like small things which especially the beauty industry really feeds us women with is scary, because it's so pervasive. Like, makeup can be oppressive for some people.
Right.
The need to look exactly the same, especially if you work in the media or are very visibly out there, like a celebrity or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was looking at the 10-year challenge that people were doing.
All right, yes.
And it's so strange that, especially for women celebrities, that they kind of look exactly the same as they did 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I do wonder about the kind of pressure that they might be experiencing to remain, to age, but also do it in a way that is beautiful and acceptable
yes.
by
yeah.
society.
You see it on, not to pick on the TV media, but I mean, you see this certainly with the American media, that, you know, the women all tend to be in their 20s,
mm-hmm.
And conventionally attractive,
mm-hmm.
Whereas the men can pretty much look any way they want,
mm-hmm.
Older,
yeah.
and not necessarily fit and trim, and you know what I mean. In
yeah.
a way that women are held a different standard. They just are.
Yeah, of course. Now, if it's a standard that women themselves are holding themselves to, if for example, I feel like I should have makeup on at work,
mm-hmm.
that's something, you know, that I feel like I should have the right to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, for an industry to profit off me,
mm-hmm.
And by telling me these things that, oh, you know, you don't look fresh enough if you don't have this product on your face.
Right.
Yeah, that's a completely different attack on me as a person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the etiquette? You know, I found interesting. We had a guest in several shows ago, and he shook your hand,
mm-hmm.
and you and I talked about later how there's certain, I don't know if etiquette's even the right word, but you
yeah.
know, you're as a Muslim woman,
mm-hmm.
are you not supposed to
mm-hmm.
Shake hands with people, or
mm-hmm.
what's the etiquette on that?
So I think the etiquette in that circumstance would be, especially if you are meeting a Muslim woman and you're not sure what to do, just, you know, place your hand on your heart and
mm-hmm.
say hello.
Yes.
Or say assalamu alaikum, like that awesome person at Tim Hortons did.
Right.
But yeah, unless the woman offers her hand herself, that's a different thing then.
Right.
But yeah, it varies because of what women study of the religion itself and the conclusion they arrive at based on their study. So not everyone agrees with me in terms of shaking hands in professional settings. People
right.
have a different interpretation of that.
Some would say that
yeah.
you shouldn't do that either.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, customs, I mean, people in the West who have no religion at all, everyone has different bars for familiarity,
yeah.
and those things have changed in cultures over the years too, right?
Yeah.
You know, hugging or giving the kiss on the cheek as a girl, or whatever, what have you,
yeah.
take your pick, you know.
Yeah.
It's interesting. And what about in terms of, you know, if I think your hijab looks good
mm-hmm.
today, if I said to you, oh, you know, Aisha, the the hijab looks good. Is that okay, or is that not
good? Yeah, I would love to hear that.
Well, it does.
Yeah, thanks for saying that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Aisha, you know, it's a great learning experience for me, getting to know you, and I hope some listeners out there have learned a bit listening to you.
Awesome, that's the hope.
So thanks for agreeing to be the guest today.
Thanks for having me.
And maybe we'll do this again for World Hijab Day next year.
Hope so.
Okay,
yeah.
And thank you everyone out there for listening, and I'm John Wells, and we will talk to you later.